Shabbat. And we'll just go briefly through the Gemara, which we're in the middle of explaining. Rav Yehoshua b'Rei Ravidi ikla lebei Rav Ashi. Rav Yehoshua, the son of Ravidi, visited the house of Rav Ashi. Avdulei igla tilta. And they prepared this delicacy, this special calf, that he should eat. Amrulei lito marmidi. So they said, will his honor taste something? Amar lehu v'tanita yativna. He said, I am sitting in a fast. I spoke about last time, a quick explanation, why it doesn't say that I am fasting, but I am sitting in a fast, that you have to get your whole self into it. And all of the connotations of the word yeshiva. Amar lei, but they asked him, v'lo savra lei mar lahad Rav Yehuda, damar Rav Yehuda, lovei adam tanito poraya. They said, why don't you don't agree with that which we learned from the name of Rav Yehuda, that if you want to, you can borrow a fast. In other words, instead of fasting today, push it off and do it tomorrow. Amar lehu tanit chalomu, said the reason that I'm fasting is because I had a bad dream. And the custom is to fast after you have a bad dream. Amar rav bar machsaya, amar rav chama bar guria, amar rav, yafet tanit lechalom ke'esh lenoret. That fasting is good for a dream, like the fire cleaves to something very flammable. In other words, it has to be close to it. And it's very fitting. That is the best way to fix a bad dream. We'll talk about that next time. V'amra chizda ubo b'yom. But it has to be on that day. V'amra v'yosef v'afilu b'shabbat. Even if it falls out on Shabbat, that a person has a bad dream on Friday night, according to the Gemara, we don't fast in that way, but you should fast on Shabbat. In other words, in my case, when we're talking about a ta'anit chalom, fasting, in order to fix a bad dream, it's something that I can't push off for another day. You should really do it right away. Rav Kook, Piskan Lamed Zayin, chapter 37, reads as follows. Amru lei v'lo svir lemar lahad Rav Yehuda dam Rav Yehuda lovei adam tanito poreah. Why don't you push off the fast, eat that which we prepared in your honor today, and fast the following day? Klal ha-mitzvot v'chiyuvei ha-Torah b'yichud b'dvarim sh'bein adam l'makom. Rav Kook says the general direction of the mitzvot and the obligations of the Torah, especially regarding religious mitzvot, that between man and God, as opposed to social mitzvot between man and his fellow man, these mitzvot in general, tachlitam hi, the goal of the mitzvot, lif'ol al kol yachid, gam ken et pu'latam ha-ritzuya. The idea of the mitzvot is to improve each and every individual in all of the desirable aspects. In other words, the Torah is geared for everyone. Likirvat Hashem, to bring them closer to God and the godly actions. V'likdushat ma'asim hamidot v'adeyot, to bring holiness to his actions, to his deeds, his opinions, his ideas. V'imze, and together with this, lagvil et ha'chayim v'tchunatam retzuya, shelo lachbid yoter midai al ha'adam v'hachbadot mosariot. Not to overdo it, and not to underdo it. And this is something that we've seen before in Rav Kook, that only kel deyot Hashem v'lo nitkenu alilot, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our manufacturer, who has the bird's eye view, he knows exactly what's good to allow, what's good not to allow, how much to obligate, how much not to obligate, not to make life too difficult. He's our Father in Heaven. He wants us to be happy. On the other hand, real happiness is through becoming a good person. In other words, the balance, the idea of the mitzvot, is to get the individual to be godly and good. Kamo shebiyer ha-Rambam b'Moreh Nevuchim b'Shlishi, in the third part of Moreh Nevuchim, v'shivui shel ha-Torah im ha-Teva, regarding the relationship of the Torah with man's nature. we'll get back to the source in the next sentence. Because Rav Kook is continuing according to this line of the Rambam. By the way, it's relatively rare that Rav Kook, usually when you see a cross source or a cross reference, it's usually in the footnotes added by his students. Here Rav Kook is putting in, is directing us directly within his teachings to this source in the Rambam, in the third part of the Guide for the Perplexed, chapter 34. Omnam. Asha tachliti likloa et amatara bechul yachid v'yachid. Even though the goal of the Torah and the mitzvot is to achieve that godliness and goodliness in every individual, mikom akom halo haTorah hi klalit u'mashkefet hi al haklal hagadol. This is a very important yisod, that even though the Torah is very interested with each and every individual, especially according to Hasidut, which says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will sometimes make an entire windstorm in order to move one leaf closer to one worm, so how much more so is the Torah directed to make each individual that much better? On the other hand, together with this, you have to remember that the Torah, like everything in the world, is geared towards the average, towards the majority, towards the masses. And in any given situation, there may be a mitzvah which may seem not to jive, not to be the best for a certain individual in a certain situation. Right? That's the nature of any law. And the Rambam writes it explicitly, and I thought of reading it a little inside, because it's such a big chidush. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything, and He knew everything when He created the world, and He knew everything when He gave the Torah, and He knew every situation that could possibly arise. Nevertheless, the Torah is geared for most people in most situations. Okay, let's see it inside. The Rambam in the Guide for the Perplexed, Perek Lamed Daled, in chapter of the third part. Mima she'ata tzarich ladat od, ki en ha-Torah mevita al ha-bodeg. The Torah is not addressing a particular person. Ve'lo ye'atzivui kefi ha-davar ha-mu'at. And the commandments are not for davka an individual case, אלא כל מה שרצוי להשיגו, השקפה, עומדה ומעשה מועיל, אין מביטים בו אלא לדברים שהם הגול. For example, a Rav Kapach brings the example of a Kohen, as you all know, is not allowed to marry a woman who has been divorced. Now, most of the commentaries explain that the idea that somebody who is involved in an unsuccessful marriage, inevitably there are some scars. That we saw Rav Kook discussing this. He spoke about Rav Kook didn't see the Holocaust, but anyone who's been through a tough time in life, you have to take that into account. And people have scars. And that a Kohen, who's supposed to be totally as holy as possible, as godly as possible, he should have the ideal wife. That's the classic explanation. On the other hand, it's very possible that a certain woman married the wrong person, didn't know what she was getting into, might have gotten divorced after a week, maybe didn't leave any scars, maybe she is the greatest woman in the entire nation of Israel, and theoretically one could build a case and say, in this case, the Kohen should be allowed to marry this woman, okay? Rav Kapach gives another example. The world doesn't work that way in nature either. When it rains, obviously there are some people who are on a teal, and my son is supposed to go on his annual hike next week. Now those 30 boys are not going, even if they daven in the morning and pray for rain, they don't really want rain. Nevertheless, Hashem is going to bring rain for the people, because society needs rain, we need We need it to drink, we need it for laundry, we need it to survive, even though on a given particular day, an individual may not be so happy with the rain. And there's insof dugmaot, there's so, life is full of examples like this, where the world and the Rambam adds, the Torah is geared for the average person in the average case. Now, Chazal add on, the Rambam doesn't relate to this. Chazal do say, Sheshomer mitzvah lo yidad bara. And Shluchei mitzvah inam nizokim, and different ideas, that a person who's doing a mitzvah is not going to suffer. Apparently, what the Rambam though would say is, okay, you're not going to lose by doing a mitzvah, but in a given situation, a given individual might not gain from that particular mitzvah. And Rav Kook goes along these lines here, and he says that in fact the Torah is objective and is talking to the objective situation, the objective person in the objective situation. Okay, Omnam. Afshia Tachlit. Even though the goal of the Torah and every individual mitzvah is to help each and every individual achieve that goal of godliness and goodliness, the Torah is objective and is overlooking the general objective people, situation. Collective. By the way, maybe another good example might be regarding the women and learning Torah. Women are not obligated to learn Torah. Now, this exemption may not sit well spiritually, in all honesty, with a certain individual woman, right? And maybe it would be better for her spiritually, maybe, to invest more time in learning, maybe, than in other mitzvot, for this individual woman. So, the Torah, and that's something that Rav Kook is going to talk about in the next sentence, does leave room for subjectiveness, for accepting upon yourself a fast, for an extra neder, a nizirut, a chumrah. Okay, we'll talk about that in the next sentence. Theoretically, yeah. On the other hand, that's the job of the Sanhedrin. It is theoretical. Rav Kook writes about this, and now we can't get off the topic. But Rav Kook does deal with if theoretically man, the Rabbanim and the Sanhedrin decide that sacrifices does not sit well with man in a certain period. He explains very clearly how the Sanhedrin does have the power to uproot certain mitzvot in certain time periods. In other words, the answer is yes, but obviously it's not the type of thing that a local rabbi can do. And today, that we don't have a Sanhedrin, it's very difficult to do. But I understand, and what I answered is that it is very possible. You're talking about the phenomenon, I'm talking about the solution. And that's why the Sanhedrin does have the power to adapt the Torah to the needs. No, that's not the same. We spoke about that once, that our situation, our generation, is a very weird situation, because if you have one foot in the exile and one foot in the redemption, and what we have today is the worst of both worlds. On the one hand, when we were in exile, and everyone did according to their local rabbi, the chief rabbi of Volozhin decided what's the halacha in Volozhin. They didn't know what was going on in Yemen. They didn't know what was going on in Morocco. As far as they know, the Torah was clear, it was black and white. He asked the chief rabbi of the city, and he decides, no confusion. Today, thank God, we have the Kibbutz Galiot. We have the ingathering of the exiles, which is part of the redemption. So we already have the confusion, but we don't yet have the solution of the Sanhedrin. So again, we have, in our particular generation, Yoshua's question is very sharp, because we have the problems of a nation coming back to the land, what to do with the Ethiopians, and the non-Jewish wives of the Russian Olim, and the laws of conversion, a lot of new halacha questions that have to be dealt with, and we don't have the apparatus yet of the Sanhedrin. The answer is, it's inevitable that that's the next bracha, that's the next stage of Geulah. The rabbis in the Sechem of Gilad, I believe we once spoke about this. In Daf Yud Zayin, they mentioned that the order of the redemption goes according to the ninth bracha of the Shmona Asrei An, where the ninth bracha is that the land of Israel should bloom. The tenth bracha, which is the next stage of redemption, is the ingathering of the exiles. And the 11th bracha, which is the next step, is to revive the Sanhedrin. The answer is, like with a lot of things, especially Rav Kook would say, grassroots developments, grassroots phenomena are godly induced. They don't come out of nowhere. And with the grassroots, if the people decide that they want to learn Torah in new types of frameworks, whether it be the Michinot Kedam Tzvayot, or the Hezer Yeshivot, or Midrashot for women, or the internet, right? That's obviously something which is part of the godly plan who's running history. And in each and every case, what we have to deal with is how, what, where, and who. Because there is, and that's what we're talking about, there's the objective aspect, and there is the subjective aspect. And you're talking about the subject to a certain generation, certain women in a certain generation, and that's what we're going to deal with now in the next sentence. So in general, I published a letter of Rav Kook to his daughter, which had been previously unpublished. I found it, where he encourages women to learn Torah in a generation where they should learn Torah, but it's very complex. He shows the other side of the coin as well. Okay, but it's hard to summarize in a nutshell. You can find it on the internet. Just do Ari Shvat, Rav Kook, Nashim. Omnam, Kidei Lahatim Al Kol Panim, Tzorchei Kol Yachida Ruchaniyim. As that being said, that which we said, that the Torah is objective. The Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Mitzvot address the masses in the average situation, in the average generation. But the Torah is not naive. The Torah does not believe in a mitat Sodom, in the beds of Sodom, to stretch somebody who's too short or to shrink somebody who's too tall. That obviously is not the way of the Torah. Kedei la'atim al kol panim tzorchei kol yachid haruchaniyim. In order to address the needs of each and every individual, his spiritual needs, Shemal Kopani Mishtanim Harbe. Right? We're not naive. We know that, as the Gemara in Masechta Brachot says, Keshem Shepartzufeihem Shonim Kein Deotem Shonot. Just like people have different faces, so too they have different personalities, they have different spiritual needs. Elein Yanim Haklaliyim Shetolichinu Behem HaTorah Yeshna Avodat Hashem HaPratit. And on the one hand, the cloud of the Torah is definitely brings the masses to where we want to go and where Hashem and the Torah wants to take us. On the other hand, there is also the individual way of serving God, the subjective way, sheparshat nedarim unezirut hi chlala. The classic example is that the Torah includes the idea of what's a neder, that if a person says, it's not enough for me, 613 mitzvot, I want to abstain from wine, or I want to be like a Kohen and not come in contact with a dead person, or I want to learn a daf yomi every day as a neder, or a woman wants to accept upon herself to daven mariv at night even though she's not obligated, or you want to accept upon yourself more, tfada, bevakasha, right? The doors are open. Interesting enough, one of the few parshiyot which is written in the feminine in the Torah, like all Semitic languages, the Torah in general addresses the masculine. But there are two topics which the Torah, even though it applies to the men as well, it's worded mainly in the feminine. It's a trivia question. Number one, is the answer to another trivia question. What is the shortest pasuk in the Torah? Yeah, I think if you count the letters, it's Mechashifa Lo Techayet. Okay, Mechashifa Lo Techayet. Yeah. In other words, that a witch deserves death. Now, the same thing is, doesn't make a difference if it's a man or a woman, but it's worded in the woman because that's a common thing. The same thing, Parshat Nedarim, is geared towards. There must be a reason why the stereotype of that, the potions and the voodoo and a lot of that.
There used to be more, but they outsourced.
The Salem witch hunt and
because the traditional picture, I don't know why this is, but the traditional picture of a wizard or a sorcerer is tolerated, you know, a man can do that, he's allowed to marry these things, but a woman which does it is somehow it's
not in the Torah. In the Torah both are the same.
Right.
The second thing which is also connected is nidarim. That women, by the way, it's the same, both witchcraft and nidarim, taking oaths and vows, is something where it's a certain type of spirituality, which is, it's not mainstream. Witchcraft, obviously, is very not mainstream. Nidarim is also for a woman, who maybe, even though women are not obligated in many of the mitzvot, she wants to accept upon herself many of them, and that's why, one of the reasons why, nidarim is worded in the feminine. And that's something that we have to be very, very careful about. V'chein mista'if mehem hilchot pratiyot, halachot pratiyot. Hey, maybe I'll mention another interesting thing. The Torah Tzvima says something interesting about Nidarim, which is directly connected with this idea of accepting upon yourself, benet l'shem shamayim, additional chumrot, additional stringencies, or extra credit mitzvot. The Torah Tzvima points out that the idea of a neder and a nazir usually is at the end. A neder, the most common neder, is to give something to Hekdesh, to the temple, to promise to give a korban in the Beit HaMikdash. A nazir, at the end of his period, also has to give his korban in Yerushalayim. And the Torah Tzvima explains that the idea is that if a person wants to accept upon himself an extra credit chumrah, he should be doing it in Yerushalayim, not in the face of his neighbor. In other words, not to gain points in the community, not to make an impression, which is the isur of yuhara, to show, look how religious I am, but to do it in a very quiet, because that's what we're talking about. If somebody subjectively really does want to come close to God, for example, to accept upon himself an extra fast, okay? That's something which is 100% legitimate, but you have to, like Yoshua said, make sure that it doesn't detract from the 613 regular mitzvot, from the objective, and number two, is, like we said, not to do it in an ostentatious, arrogant way. Another explanation.
That's what happens when people make out the other.
וכן מסתעיף מהם הלכות פרטיות שכל אדם יוכל להנהיג עצמו על פי דרכי קדושה וחסידות הנאותים לו. A person has to make sure that they are נאותים לו, that it's something that fits him, as we learned in חזון הצמחונות, we spoke about this in Oroka Tshuva, that a person shouldn't, he's not allowed to skip stages, that it's unhealthy to do things artificially, to pretend you're here if you're only here. But if something does fit you well, that a person isn't finding satisfaction with the general commandments for everyone. And this is the source, how a person is allowed to, an individual is allowed to accept upon himself, like Rabbi Yeshua Breid Ravidi in the story here in the Gemara, to accept upon himself special fasts. Spirituality has to be very real, and it has to be subjective. That's what Rav Kook is saying. Interesting note.
Understanding.
Well, we learned about that last time, that it all depends on who, what, where, and to make sure that it's something that brings you happiness and not sadness. Right. Okay, that was really the previous paragraph. Yeah. Maybe just we'll give another example. The Kabbalah talks about the idea of tikkun, that every individual has a subjectively spiritual world for which he was brought to this world. Every individual has a role, and he, and according to the idea of Gilgul Neshamot, which we won't get off the topic of reincarnation. But in a nutshell, if anybody wants to see the sources, Rabbi Bahai, the Rabban, the Abarbanel, we all write about it on the Parsha of the Yibum, Chalitza, where, in a nutshell, if a person's soul has not reached completion, achieved completion, then one of the ways of tikkun is to come back for a second shot, and a third shot, and a fourth shot. Now, how do you know what mitzvot you didn't complete in the previous time around? There are two opposite ways. One way is if a person sees that there's a certain mitzvah which he really connects with. It could be fasting, it could be learning a lot of Torah, it could be chesed, it could be Zionism, it could be volunteering, it could be a lot of that. That's a sign that is your tikkun. That's one of your tikkunim, because if a person has a natural affinity, it just feels good. Maybe. That's one of the explanations of why in this generation, as we approach Geula, there are so many people, even the greatest of Gedolim, like Vilna Gaon, the Chafetz Chaim, never were zochet to live in the land of Israel, were not zochet to be buried in the land of Israel. on the other hand, today, even a 1 or 2 day-year-old child, even if he just lives 2 days, if he lives in the land of Israel and he's buried in the land of Israel, that may very well be a tikkun of a great tzaddik in a previous generation who had everything except for that one last tikkun. The other extreme, how does an individual know what is his tikkun, is if he finds that there's a certain mitzvah which is particularly difficult. There is either something which you particularly enjoy, or the opposite, something which is particularly difficult. And the classic example which they give as we approach the Geula is the tikkun of the Brit HaMilah and Brit HaMilah, the spoken word and the sex drive. Brit HaMilah is the tikkun of if a person in a previous generation, previous time around, was not careful, wasn't successful in observing the laws of tzniut. He has to come around a second time. This time, we should do it right. The second Brit Milah is regarding HaMilah HaMeduberet, the spoken word, where one can say that the test of, obviously everyone in Kabbalah has also a feminine aspect and also a masculine aspect. All men, all women have both sides. On the other hand, you could say that the test of the men, the stronger test of the men, is regarding the sex drive, the Brit HaMilah, and maybe the stronger test of the female side of us is the spoken word. And that's why it's not a coincidence that Cook writes that in the generation that sees us coming back to the land of Israel and the revival of the Holy Land and the Holy Language, the Chafetz Chaim had to come and revive the issue, bring it, Lashon Hara, Rechilut, guard your tongue, back on the agenda, because it was being neglected. And if we do want this to be the final generation before redemption, this is the time to do it. And if a person blew it the first time, and second, and third, and fourth, and fifth time, and the Zohar even tells about how somebody, he just can't control himself. He can't control his tongue. And sometime eventually, he may, even after he passes away, beg Hashem to let him come back as somebody who's either deaf or dumb. That, give me a little help, that I should get it right the next time. Okay. And the same thing you could say that regarding with the internet and all the pornography and the right. It's so much more difficult today with mass communication, Dalka, to observe also Lashon Hara and also pornography. The Yetzer Arayot. On the other hand, like we said before, that is a sign that is the tikkun of the generation. And one of the things that Rav Tzvi Yehuda used to point out is that these are the topics that a person really should be especially careful in our generation. A, tikkun chet ha-meraglim, to fix the sin of the spies who, unfortunately, Jews spoke bad about the land of Israel throughout the generations, neglected the making Aliyah, neglected the importance of the land of Israel throughout all generations. That's a sin that has to be fixed before the coming of the Geula. And if it's a sin that repeats itself over and over and over again, that means that we're not getting it right. Our generation has to stress that. Rav Tzvi Yehuda also used to stress the importance of Shmirat HaLashon, to learn 15 minutes a day of the Chafetz Chaim, also for that second tikkun. And he also said that regarding the famous, the Chafetz Chaim spoke about the Mishnah Berurah allows women to reveal the bottom part of the leg from underneath the knee, the shin. And Rav Yehuda said, it's a shame that he was lenient regarding that. In our generation, if there's one topic that we have to be more machmir, subjective, that's our topic, subjective to the tikkun, also the individual neshama who may have been here in a previous Gilgul, or if we get back to not Kabbalah, to the tikkun, if a person finds that a certain mitzvah is difficult in his generation, that's a sign that that is the challenge, his tikkun. So those are the fields, if a person feels, not necessarily, or I should say, in addition to those three examples, if a person feels, of course, we could make a long list. I'm sure there are many, many things. For sure, social justice. Okay? So again, all of these things are, there is room within the halakha. The halakha has certain things which are obligatory, certain things which are prohibited, but there are many, many things which you're allowed, and you should subjectively find a way to elevate. Through, for example, this idea of adding on to meet your subjective spiritual needs. The chivan shekoli kar mitziutan hu rak latim et ha'inyanim ha'pratiyim shel tzorchei ha'yachid el ha'inyanim ha'klaliyim ha'toriyim hem ot ne'eman ki ha'inyanim ha'klaliyim hem chazakim omdim le'olam b'kiyumah. Is the fact that the Torah leaves leeway to accept upon yourself stringencies, Davka also stresses the fact that where there is no leeway, there's no leeway. There is objective spirituality, and there's also subjective. And this is the two sides of the coin. Rav Kook, as always, shows the one side, and then he shows the other side, and the two sides don't contradict, but they complement each other. V'chalila lishluach bahem yad. Chas v'shalom, we're not allowed to have any kind of individual spirituality affect the objective halakha. I think I may have mentioned once the telephone call that I got 15 minutes before Shabbat of the Baal Tshuva, who heard that I'm a rabbi and also a musician, who asked me, he said, I just found out that he was planning on, he was a new Baal Tshuva, and he said his spiritual high of Shabbat is when he plays his guitar. That brings spiritually elevates him. Again, subjectively that may elevate you, but if it objectively contradicts the halakha, it's like somebody who feels religious by wearing a cross. I don't know. Just called it one time.
Al pi rigshei levav yachid o yechidim. Al ken, l'umat ha-kviyut v'abitzaron, bitzaron is the strength, the fortification, sheyesh b'chiyuvei ha-tzibur b'chol tokev ha-oz. Right? As opposed to the objective halakha, of which that is set, that is objective for all people in all generations. I'll add parenthetically that part of Aseilach Harav, of having a local halachic authority, is that sometimes also within the fortress of halakha, there is more leeway and more flexibility than many people know about. Okay? But that is also, I'm saying that parenthetically. Rav Kook here is saying, together with the fortress of the objective halacha, tzarich limatzei binyanim hayechidim halalu kol haroch. This is the time for softness, for flexibility. Vayitmashchut lefi matzav hayechid upirtei inyanav b'chol ha'efshar, to come to meet his subjective spiritual needs as much as possible. Ki rak az yishamshu et te'udatam lashlim et tzorchei hayechid al tzorchei haklal. And the idea of this individual subjective chumrot is to help the individual reach the goal of the objective spirituality of the klal. Mibli lagat binyanim haklaliim, without harming those objective the fortress of halacha, al ken tanito hayechidit. Therefore, when Rav Yehoshua is talking about his individual fast, Love Adamu Porea. Halachically, if an individual accepts upon himself to a fast, the Gemara says, the halacha is, you are allowed to push it off for the next day. All right, you didn't have to fast in the first place. The whole idea is that you have a subjective spiritual need, and if it turns out that that spiritual subjective need isn't met, there is a surprise in your day, a certain event happens that you have to change your plans, yes, you can move the fast off and do it tomorrow. Because again, that is the classic example of subjectivity within subjectivity. Even if it just be for a physical reason. Say a person, he decided he wanted to do a fast, and in the morning he feels faint. What's the halacha? Push it off. Because again, if the whole idea is for you to be get subjectively more spiritual, and today that subjectivity isn't good for you, push it off. Again, Rav Kook is beautifully explaining this is the subjective of the subjective. Even a squared subjective need is legitimate, because that's the topic. According to the needs of that person. As opposed to the general service of Hashem, the fortress, which stands above Mikolin Yenim HaPratiyim. A person cannot decide, I am going to push off Yom Kippur and do it the following day. You can't do that regarding Tisha B'Av, you can't do that regarding any objective mitzvah. But there is that flexibility regarding the needs of the subject. The objective halakha never changes. The subjective halakha, that is the time for flexibility and what Rav Kook calls softness to meet the individual needs. So to summarize, the Torah addresses the masses and the needs and the objective needs, and there has to be an objective law and order, otherwise there won't be anything. On the other hand, the Torah and the beauty, especially the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and even the Torah Shebichtav, the written law, leaves room for nidarim, for nizirut, for additional things, for optional things. And that is the way to make the Torah as real and to internalize it as much as possible.
Yeah. Not only can one not support the Shabbat, which everybody, one also can't decide to do the
That's an interesting point, that Rav Kook, although he doesn't relate to that example in the end, he relates to that example in the middle. I didn't notice that. It may be that he has that in mind, that even subjective, if there are certain things, like Nazirut, like Avi says, that if you do bring it upon yourself, objective, then it becomes objective. And there are objective ways, also that you have to bring this and this korban, after this and this amount of time, and you have to follow the laws.
There were two things that are unique about you. One is that, that the
That's the reason why it's not in the 613. Oh, sure.